Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Each year, a little over a quarter million people from around the world walk the 500-mile Camino de Santiago, across Spain from the Pyrenees of France or up from Portugal, all converging in Santiago de Compostela and its cathedral and its shrine to St. James, where tradition says that his remains are. For many, it's a pilgrimage of their faith, following the steps of countless other pilgrims over the centuries. For others, it's a recreational or secularly spiritual journey. For others, a celebration of life, or a way of making recovery, or a search for the ineffable. For journalist Steve Watkins, it was a step in recovery from depression. But as he met others from around the world on the trail, it soon became a documenting of what this 30 to 40 day walking journey meant to others, as well as himself. His recounting of the journey in real time went viral among Camino followers, and he's now the author of Pilgrim Strong, Rewriting My Story on the Way of St. James. He'll be a guest tonight at All Souls Unitarian Church. He'll be speaking about his experiences at 7. And he joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Steve Watkins, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for allowing me to be here, Richard. It's my pleasure.
Your book, Pilgrim Strong, tells of your story of walking the Camino de Santiago, the Camino de Francis, which actually begins in the Pyrenees of France and then 500 miles across to Santiago. What persuaded you to take this pilgrimage? You're not Catholic, so what was the actual impetus?
Excellent question. And, you know, there are as many reasons as there are people who do this. I've been a writer and a journalist all my life and was actually self-employed in the publishing world beginning in 2005 and was doing pretty well in the business. And something hit the United States in 2008 that I had never seen and didn't recognize, and it was called the Great Recession. I had just started a new publishing business about 12 months before, and things were going really well. And then the economy began to slow down. Me not really recognizing what was happening, I just kind of began to pour more and more money into the business, thinking that, you know, we would eventually overcome this. But what you realize in our world is that when tough economic times hit, one of the first things where businesses begin to cut back is their paid advertising, which was my primary source of revenue. And one day everything just stopped. Mm. One day all the advertising just stopped. We hung on for a few more weeks, and things rapidly progressed to a point where I realized one day I had to lay off about 7 remarkably talented employees. My wife and I were self-employed in that business, and we basically just had to shutter it up and lock the door. I had previously been divorced after a 19-year marriage the year before that. So the combination of the emotional toil that all of that came together and took on me was quite devastating. For the first time in my life, I couldn't see tomorrow, much less next year or 5 years down the road. And for a personality like mine, well, when things go black like that, it's really tough. And so I went into a really dark time of depression that was, it was just a really bad time. So over the course of 2 or 3 years, there was a very slow recovery from that dark time. And my wife and I would entertain ourselves at night by watching travel shows or movies on Netflix or, and, you know, I mean, we would redream these dreams. And one night on Netflix, I came across a movie, and it was simply called The Way. Mm. It had Martin Sheen in it, and it was about this man's journey across Spain. His son had gone to the Camino, had begun the pilgrimage, and he ran into a storm in the Pyrenees and died on pilgrimage. So Martin Sheen, the main character, goes to collect the remains of his son and ends up walking that pilgrimage in honor of his deceased son. And as the credits rolled at the end of that movie, I wept because it was so touching and so real. And I looked at my wife as the credits rolled and I said, you know, I'm going to walk that pilgrimage one day. And she said, yes, I know you are. And so it took about 3 years to gather the resources and the time that it takes to do something like that. And I booked a plane ticket to Madrid. And actually, I mean, the short answer to that question that you asked is, I went on pilgrimage to celebrate the recovery, the beginning recovery from that deep, dark depression, and basically to have some alone time with God and see if He would point me in the next direction, whatever it was. Because that's all I really had at the time. I didn't know where things were going, and I needed direction. And that is why I went on Camino.
One of the things you write about in the book, Pilgrim Strong, is that it surpassed all your expectations. It also didn't meet your expectations. And what you found was perhaps a completely different experience than you expected going in, as far as what you got out of the Camino.
Because, as any journalist would do, I did a lot of research going in.
Right.
And that research created certain expectations. And so, I mean, I consider myself to be a fairly spiritual person as well. And I think I went in having this notion of what a pilgrim should be on pilgrimage, that I should be quiet and I should be reverent and just walk. And I really think in many ways I took myself out of my own character. And about day four, as I was approaching Pamplona, I just realized that I was surrounded by all these interesting people, and I was walking through all these interesting places. And as a writer, I was surrounded by story. Story was everywhere. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm here to tell the story. And when I actually freed myself up to do that, I stopped at a little tienda, and I bought a notepad, and I would occasionally take notes on my phone, but I began to actually, as I was visiting with other pilgrims along the way from every other corner of the world, you know, on pilgrimage, all you have to do is walk and talk. That's all there is to do. We talk about eat, sleep, walk, repeat, or something like that. That's all there is to do on pilgrimage. But I just began gathering stories, and so I don't know that I don't recommend this for, and it's a question that everyone asks themselves when they go on pilgrimage in the world that we live in today. Should we remain connected to the outside world via social media? Okay.
Yeah. In your case, you did.
In my case, I did. And so I began to actually tell those stories in real time. And it developed, I think probably because of the transparent nature of how I told those stories. I mean, I told the good, the bad, and the ugly, not just the pretty. It drew a surprising following that built every single day. And so when I walked into Santiago de Compostela on day 40, there were somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 notes of congratulations on social media, which was just this incredible thing. And I think it just goes to show how hungry people in the world today are for real, genuine, authentic storytelling, which is kind of what that's how I view what I do.
Now, you went as sort of a celebration of emerging from depression, but also I think there was a spiritual quest for something at the heart of the Camino. When you began talking with people, were you surprised by the variety of reasons people decided to take this trek? I mean, I would assume there's some who look at it as a long-distance hike in which they're going to see different people, and the spiritual part is a small part of it, but not a big part of it. For others, that's all that it is.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, there are pilgrims there who are there for the most traditional reasons that pilgrimage entails. Some that are there just for the sake of adventure. Some don't know why they're there at all. Some are there in between major life transitions, whether it be a divorce or a job change or whatever it may be, and they're just kind of searching for the next answer. But, you know, the most surprising thing that I found on this trek is that there were many people there who, for some reason, believed that at the end of this 500-mile pilgrimage, whatever problem it was that they were dealing with, and we've all got problems. We're all screwed up. They believed that there was some magic at the end of this pilgrimage.
There's going to be an epiphany.
There's going to be an epiphany, and the major debt that they're carrying will just vanish, or the woundedness that they're carrying from a parent relationship will just go away. And it's one of the great, I think it's one of the great downfalls to many people who are there who believe that, because, you know, wherever we go, we take ourselves with us.
Have you heard from those people that were expecting an epiphany, and were they disillusioned by the journey? Or because, you know, you had your own expectations at the end. You found them to be sort of anticlimactic when you arrived in Santiago at the cathedral.
Right.
But on reflection, all of a sudden you realize, wow, this was so much more than I expected.
You know, back here in the United States, there is a loose organization called American Pilgrims on Camino that has chapters all across the country. There's an Oklahoma chapter, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. Tomorrow, I'm headed to Kansas City, where there's an active chapter in Kansas City, and then on over to St. Louis. And it's interesting how the relationships come together in these what we call APOC chapters. And I really think the very reason and the essence for their existence is because when we all come home, we're still searching and we're still looking for the answer. You know, what did this mean to me? What did this experience mean? Was it just a minor event? Was it just a vacation that I went on?
Or was it a 500-mile hike?
Yeah, was it just a 500-mile hike? Or does it actually mean something to the greater purpose of my life? And I think it's the essence for the existence of these chapters, because we all continue to discuss that amongst ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you made some great friends along that 500-mile hike, right?
Again, the only thing you have to do when you're walking with someone along the way is just talk. And it is amazing when you think about the world that we live in and all the shields and all the defenses and all the masks that we put up. There is something about being in this place and having this experience where all those things come down quite rapidly. And you may find yourself in the first 10 minutes in a conversation with someone from Hungary about some of the deepest subjects in life. And it's wonderful. I mean, it's actually quite wonderful to have those conversations, and they do create these incredible friendships. At the end of this tour, the leg of this tour that I'm on now, I'll end up in Detroit for 3 days, and I will actually get to spend the night one night with my very closest friend from Camino. Her name is Naomi White, and we walked together for the last 2 weeks to the end. And it will be like being reunited with a sister.
Yeah. And you described some really amazing discussions, because at that particular point, you were really hurting. I think you had severe shin splints, and mm-hmm. you were really, really suffering the last couple of weeks. And you recount some wonderful conversations where Naomi would engage you and basically getting you to think about anything but that shin. She would ask you these deep philosophical questions. And in at least a couple of cases, it's like it really opened your mind to things you never really thought about. You actually put voice to things you had never put voice to before.
Yeah. And I remember specifically we were walking one day and Naomi just instinctively knew that I was feeling bad. And you can, you know, after you spend so much time with one another, I mean, you can just begin to sense what's going on with the other person. And so Naomi was a master of distraction. She would do anything to help me take my mind off those things. And just out of the blue one day, she said, what are you the most proud of? And I had never really thought of my life in terms of, you know, what am I the most proud of? And I said, you know, I don't know. Let's walk a few more. Let's walk a few more miles and I'll get back to you on that one. And I actually started thinking about it. And Naomi, I'm not Catholic. Naomi is a very strong Catholic in her faith. And a couple of miles down the road, I said, you know what I think I'm the most proud that I've realized over time is what God sees most is the heart, not our good intentions or not our mistakes or not our resume, but I think what God sees is our heart. And I'm okay with that because, I think my heart's okay.
My guest today is Steve Watkins. He's an author and journalist who walked the 500-mile route of the Camino de Santiago. He's written a book about it titled Pilgrim Strong, and he'll be speaking about it tonight at 7 o'clock at All Souls Unitarian Church, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. That Pilgrim Strong was something you came up with as a part of the social media thing. It was hashtag Pilgrim Strong, and it goes to sort of a, this was not an easy journey for you. It's not an easy journey for anybody, but it was, you know, you were, you're, I'm just going to say it, I'm a big guy. You're a big guy.
Oh, yeah.
You lost a lot of weight on this, I think, what is it, 31 pounds in 40 days?
Lost 31 pounds in 40 days. Naomi looked at me one day. We had only been together for about 5 days at that point, and this is toward the end, and she said, your face is getting thinner. And I hadn't even thought much about it other than I knew the belt was had changed a loop or two. And I actually walked in and paid a quarter at a pharmacy in a town one day. And at that time, I was down 28 pounds.
Wow.
And it shocked me.
But you try to keep this attitude of, I think you termed it Pilgrim Strong, but at some point it says, you know, this is no place for crybabies, so I'm not going to complain. Even when I'm in the worst sort of pain, I think at one point you had a day where you were almost physically ill, and you said, I'm just not going to complain. And you found that to be a fairly common reaction. In a situation where a lot of people in a normal day and age would probably complain about things.
Yeah, you know, we live in this world where we can find an excuse for everything. It was somebody else's fault. Someone else did this to me. And I don't mean to discount some of the issues that people deal with. But nobody took me there. I asked to be there. I had desired to be there. And I just didn't want to have that, you know, I didn't want to have that attitude. I was actually blessed to be there. And if you think back about the history of pilgrimage and what pilgrimage truly is, I mean, it was never promised to be some walk in the park. But, you know, as I teach these classes about the Camino and we're going around the country now, I kind of try to put this in relative terms for people. If you look at the Camino de Santiago, if you're on the Camino Francis, you're going to walk 500 miles. You're going to walk across a couple of mountain ranges. You're going to walk through a desert-like region. You're going to, over 35 or 40 days, you're going to experience all kinds of weather. But if you can compare that to the Appalachian Trail, which is about 2,200 miles, or the Pacific Crest Trail out in the west, which is upwards of closer to 3,000 miles, and all these elevations and ups and downs, the Camino is doable. It's not herding elephants over the Alps, but it's not a Sunday walk in the park either. But it's doable, and it's a great... for whatever reason you're there, I mean, it is in fact a challenge. And I think, I mean, this may sound weird, but to some extent, I think we would all be a little bit better off if we heard a little bit more, if we knew what that was like.
What did you gain through the pain? What did you understand through hurt?
When I get in my car now and I have to run an errand to Target or Walmart or wherever I'm going, if there's not a parking spot available at the front door, if I have to park in the far corner parking lot, I don't really get too mad about it anymore because I've walked 500 miles across the country. I can walk across the parking lot. Or if it's fall and the leaves are falling in the yard and I have to go out and rake, you know, it's not that big a deal. And so, I mean, back in my younger days, I was actually a distance runner and did a lot of marathon running. So, I mean, going into Camino, I mean, I was familiar with things like, you know, the pain that you experience and the depletion that you experience in events like this. But again, at the end of the day on Camino, you're going to probably have a soft bed with a pillow and you're going to have functioning plumbing and a bathroom, and it may not be the Ritz-Carlton. It won't be. For €5, it'll be a bed and a bathroom. And it will be in a communal atmosphere with other pilgrims, which is actually part of the beauty and blessing of being there, is living in community with people from all corners of the world.
My guest today is Steve Watkins. He is the author of Pilgrim Strong. He'll be talking about his experience of walking the Camino de Santiago. He'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at All Souls Unitarian Church, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Tell us about the last few days and the I think at the beginning of the last day, you could look down into Santiago and see the cathedral in the distance. What was that experience like that last day? It reads as though it was a bit anticlimactic.
You know, just hearing you talk about it, it almost makes me tear up just to think about it, because in an experience like this, you've put in so much preparation, and it has actually been the focus of your life for some period of time leading up to the experience enduring. And then all of a sudden, one day after 35 to 40 days, you're making those final steps. And I guess all of us who do that have sort of, as we discussed a little bit before, we have different expectations for what those final steps will be like. And when I'm getting ready for something like this, and back in my marathon days, I'm a very visual person. And I would actually, in my training, I would imagine what it was like to cross that finish line. And it kind of helps get through the tediousness and the difficulty of training. And I had imagined all the months leading up to this time, what a glorious moment this would be as you walk into the square and the bagpipes would be playing as they welcome pilgrims coming in. And I walked into the square, and I had, as you talked about, I had been hurting so badly for the last 3 days. I was actually hobbling, and I was reduced. My mileage in the last 3 days was reduced to 10 miles per day. I got to the square, and I looked up at the cathedral, and I put my backpack down on the cobblestones, laid down, put my head on the backpack as if a pillow. And I just remember thinking, thank God I don't have to walk anymore. It's over. I thank you, Lord, that I don't have to take another step.
I love the way you described going into the city, which was, you almost expected the, in a way, to have the red carpet laid out.
Sure.
And actually in Santiago, you said, this was the first place where nothing was marked. It was a big city, and it's like there was no markings, just showing you the way of the trail.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you arrive in the square and you did have that reaction. But on further reflection, all of a sudden you realized what this experience meant, something completely different maybe than a 500-mile walk, and that came later.
Exactly. There was no epiphany. There was no great revelation at the moment of entering the square. And what I now realize almost 2.5-3 years later is that God did not reveal to me specifically and in some climatic way what my future was, but he put me on a path from there. It was the beginning of a new path to an understanding of what it would come to be. So when I came home, there's a chapter in the book called The Empty Space. And I think many of us experience it when something like this is complete. It's what we talked about earlier. What do I do with this now? I was trying to process it myself. What does it mean to me? Was it just a hike? And so I did the only thing that I knew to do. I mean, I'm one of those guys who does not understand the more complex things of life or understand what I actually think about them or what I feel about them until I write about it. So the only thing I knew to do was sit down and write. And I gathered my notes. I mean, I've always been a newspaper print journalist, not a book author, which I have come to learn are two very distinct and different things. But when I gathered my notes and I began to put them into various topical areas, I realized, well, these look like chapters to a book. And so I thought, okay, I'm a writer. This will be pretty easy. It was actually quite difficult. And I wrote for 18 months. To what was ultimately the book Pilgrim Strong. And I now understand that path that I was put on was leading me to a place where, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of consider what I'm doing now, it's kind of a calling. I mean, it's kind of a ministry to me, because it's not even so much, my message is not even so much specifically for pilgrims or for the pilgrim community or for people who have, it is for them, but it is also for People who like me have experienced unexpected brokenness in their life and these unexpected ups and downs and peaks and valleys that so many of us go through. And to help people understand that it's okay to talk about this and we all go through it and we don't have to pretend that we're perfect and that everything's wonderful and glorious every day, because we all know that none of us really live a life like that.
And I really got the sense it was about this connectedness to others. And their reasons may have been completely different for taking that walk, but you had this connectedness with so many different people. Sometimes it would maybe only be for an afternoon, and you never saw them again. Others for weeks, and it led to, you know, friendships beyond the Camino.
People talk a lot about what they call Camino magic on the way, and it's this idea that all your needs will be provided at the very moment you need them, at just the right place, at just the right moment, at just the right time. Which to me, you know, as a factual journalist, is kind of a mystical thought. And I remember staying at an albergue in Pamplona on about day five, and I quickly developed a relationship with a hospitalero there who was a German man who had been there for many years. And he struck me as a man with great wisdom, and I just sat down with him one morning before I left on the next morning's walk, and we did an interview, and I asked him about this notion of Camino magic, and I said, you know, I can't buy into that idea. And he said, well, here's what you need to know, and this is, he said, if you haven't discovered it yet, you will. Think about the times that we're living in now. Actually, there was. Back in the United States, it was the early stages of the presidential election. Kind of the whole environment in the United States was kind of changing. And he said, think about where you are at this moment in time where people from all corners of the world are on a path and they're moving in the same direction with the same purpose. And there's this incredible unity among such a diverse group of people. Where else have you experienced something like that? And the answer was nowhere, never. And he said, that is the magic of the Camino.
You can hear more about it tonight at 7 at All Souls Unitarian. Steve, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. My pleasure.
Steve Watkins is an author and journalist who walked the 500-mile Camino de Santiago and wrote about it in his book, Pilgrim Strong, Rewriting My Story on the Way of St. James. He'll be speaking about his experiences tonight at 7 o'clock at All Souls Unitarian Church. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.